Not only does Celestia have the throughput that Ethereum is aiming for years down the line, it also has the security of data availability sampling and of light nodes.
Hi, John. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The goal of Celestia is to get to 1 gigabyte per second throughput in terms of data availability. And I did the math, it can balloon into 5 petabytes of data in a single year. How's that even possible? That sounds crazy.
Yeah, so there's a few things there. First of all, I'm not saying that we wouldn't be aiming for 1 gigabyte per second, but the numbers that we have been talking about are 1 gigabyte blocks, which are our blocks are approximately every, let's say 10 to 12 seconds. So that's looking at a throughput of, 100 to 125 megabytes per second. Now, that being said, that is not the end state, and I would not be surprised if we see throughputs well beyond that, including 1 gigabyte per second in the future. But just to clarify that most of what we've been talking about has been slightly less than that. Okay, so now how do you deal with large storage requirements? That's a good question. So the interesting difference between Celestia and chains that have like a data availability scheme in them versus blockchains that are more like Bitcoin or Ethereum that have state is that the data in blocks doesn't need to be accessed in order to verify new blocks. The only thing that a blockchain node needs to verify new blocks is state. So in the case of Ethereum, for instance, it's things like account balances, contract state, which can include token balances, LP positions, all this other stuff. That's state. So all of that needs to be kept in very quickly accessible memory. So this is why they usually recommend having a large solid-state disk for Ethereum, because it needs to be read in order to verify new blocks, and it needs to be read in a way that is randomly accessed. So it's very, very poor for performance. When it comes to the blockchain history itself, like the actual blocks, those can be very large because you don't need to access them to verify new blocks. You just kind of dump them on disk and just leave them there. So because of that, yes, it could be a large amount of space, but you don't actually need to put it in a very expensive storage medium. You can put it in a much cheaper, a much higher density storage medium such as disk, or even, if we're talking huge block sizes, then we're looking at tape potentially, stuff like that. In addition to that, there's various things you can do, like network sharding of nodes, so that nodes don't need to store every block, they only need to store a subset of blocks, and as long as collectively you have a larger number of cheaper nodes, the network as a whole has access to the entirety of history. So there's various schemes like this, but this is generally a challenge that all blockchains that will have high throughput in terms of data availability, including Celestia, maybe including Ethereum, we'll see. Including Solana, that have high bandwidth, they'll all have to deal with larger histories. But the nice thing is that it's a much easier problem to solve than a large state problem because the performance requirements for storing that data are completely different.
So basically, Celestia as a standalone data availability chain, it has the benefit of being much more efficient because basically saving blocks doesn't require the blockchain to read the blocks from previous state.
Like you said, because it was designed from scratch, it doesn't have a built-in way of executing smart contracts, and therefore its state is going to be substantially smaller, and verifying blocks, other than the actual downloading of them, is substantially cheaper than basically, well, any smart contract blockchain.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty good pitch, basically. Wouldn't every blockchain at some point start using specialized data availability? Do you think that's going to be the case? Or where are we going? The big picture of the unbundling of blockchains. Do you think every blockchain will basically use a solution like Celestia, for example, at some point? Or do you think most blockchains will have their own solutions? But it seems like what you're offering has a big improvement over doing things natively, right?
Yes, well, obviously I'm biased, but I agree. Whether or not I see blockchains building their own thing versus using Celestia, I would say it would be a mix of both, and continue. It is currently a mix of both, and will continue to be a mix of both, right? You see, Ethereum, for instance, Ethereum has, in addition to its, what they say L1 or its, L1 execution, the EVM and stuff, they have as a sidecar essentially some scheme for doing data availability and side by side with the actual L1 EVM. You have chains like Near that are popping up and offering data availability solutions with Waffle or something like that. You have chains like Solana, for instance. They offer network extensions. Not exactly the same thing as data availability plus rollups, but it bears a lot of similarities to that. So there's kind of, even right now, you see the various chains, even if they didn't start this way, they're moving towards supporting it through an extension of some sort or through a sidecar, just data availability with no execution, and then having these kind of highly concentrated rollup clients that can then use that data availability space for their users, as opposed to working directly on the L1. So that's something that is happening today, and I anticipate is going to continue happening in the future. People are going to build their own stuff, but then people are also going to use Celestia. And the reason they're going to use Celestia, and they choose to use Celestia today, and they'll choose to use Celestia in the future, is that while in a vacuum, bytes are just bytes and DA is a commodity, it's everything around the data availability that is not a commodity. And in that context, Celestia offers today and will continue to do so based on its trajectory, the most secure, the most verifiable, and within that framework, the highest throughput. Obviously, if you compare Celestia to Amazon AWS, like, yeah, sure, Celestia has lower throughput than Amazon AWS, but it gives you something that AWS doesn't, right? It gives you the verifiability to build unstoppable applications and rollups. And, other data availability solutions that purport to offer higher throughput don't offer that and don't have that on their immediate roadmap.
So the right now, like Celestia is being used by a lot of rollups primarily, right? This seems to be like a very good market fit for Celestia. You are one of the creators of like inventing rollups pretty much, right? From your own history. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. And did you like, is that also the reason why you started building Celestia as like a, and why it has such a good fit for rollups now?
I guess that's kind of an interesting origin story. I wouldn't say I invented rollups, but I would say that I was the first person to publish the design pattern and framework that we now call optimistic rollups. The idea for ZK rollups had been published previously by Barry Whitehat and then popularized by Vitalik Buterin. Right, I was the first person to publish concretely this game that is now called optimistic rollups. But in general, a lot of my research before co-founding Lazy Ledger, now known as Celestia, was in the roll-up space and thinking about how to scale blockchains. So yeah, I would say that a lot of the reason that Celestia is the way it is because it was built by people that were heavily involved in the scaling blockchain and scaling Ethereum space way back in the day, half a decade ago, and who are familiar slash came up with these kind of various roll-up schemes, and therefore this makes Celestia quite amenable and quite suitable for roll-ups, to the surprise of no one.
Yeah. No, that's like, you see, like the vision of like the unbundling of blockchains, is this something you always anticipated kind of, or is this more of a vision that's developed more recently, or?
That vision kind of forms the basis of Lazy Ledger, which was Celestia was known as at the time, half a decade ago. So yes, that we kind of anticipated and foresaw that this is the next step in the blockchain design evolution would be this kind of modularization, with modular blockchains, which is just a different word for what you're saying, the unbundling of execution and data availability. Yeah.
I would love to dig a little bit into like the details of Celestia and also like your technical roadmap and so on. So there's two things I would like to talk about. One is like Light Nodes, and then also you have a big upgrade coming, Ginger upgrade. But let's start with the Light Nodes maybe. Can you give like an intro to Light Nodes and what is the concept of Light Nodes and which role does it play?
That's great that you asked that question because Light Nodes are one of the most important concepts that sets apart Celestia from basically every other protocol. Except potentially Bitcoin, but that's a story for another day. So the concept of a Light Node was actually first proposed by Satoshi Nakamoto in the Bitcoin design paper. He dedicated an entire section of the Bitcoin design paper just on Light Nodes, and he called them SPV clients, or Simplified Payment Verification clients, right? Ones that could keep track of the blockchain in a lighter way rather than downloading everything, and that could receive proofs of correct proofs that their transactions were included. Now you can of course extend these proofs. It's not just your transaction included. You can have proofs that the transaction was both included and had certain effects, or you can have proofs of I have the these are my balances, etc. Right? So these proofs can be more generalized. The summary is you have some blockchain node that is substantially lighter than a full node, but that still has very high security guarantees. Now, the original SPV node design proposed by Satoshi had certain shortcomings. shortcomings that were resolved with the data availability sampling scheme that forms the basis of Light nodes in Celestia and other blockchains that implement, or non-blockchains that implement, data availability sampling in some form. So how does it work, essentially? The issue with the SBB client design in Bitcoin is that you could, if someone gave you, you could get a proof that your transaction was included, or, you know, if in Ethereum's case, you could get a proof that your account had a certain balance, right? It's a proof of something. You can get a proof of something, and you can be sure the proof is correct. The problem is you don't know anything else about the block is correct. And that can be solved with ZK proofs. You can have a proof of validity that the block is correct, but you're still missing something. You're still missing, is the block actually available to everyone? And available means that everyone in the world, not that they have to see, but they can see the entire contents of the block. They can fully download them and inspect them and use them. Now, why would they want to use them? They would want to use them because you need to know all the blocks to know the current state of the chain, right? That's how blockchains work by design, right? You scan through all the blocks, and then you execute them all, and you get to the current state of the chain. Everyone's account balances, all the contract balances. But you need to actually run through all the blocks. You need to know the current state so that you can create new blocks and verify new blocks. So if you know that all the previous blocks are all valid, that's fine, but that doesn't tell you what the current state is, right? And again, you need the whole current state in order to verify new blocks and produce new blocks. So that's kind of the summary of the problem, is that, sure, you can, with ZK proofs, you can be ensured the blocks are all correct, but you're still missing something, which is you don't know if the blocks are available to everyone. And in the absence of this availability, people don't have the state and the blockchain freezes. Right? That's one potential attack factor. So what is data availability sampling? Data availability sampling is essentially taking the block, doing some math on it, and then having Light nodes, which are a special class of nodes. Instead of these Light nodes fully downloading the block, they only download a very small number of sections of the block, we call shares. And then, using some fancy math, assuming there's enough Light nodes, and assuming that they can all talk to each other, which are pretty weak assumptions, then the block itself can be guaranteed to be available, or everyone is going to agree that it's not available. There's some math in the paper that Mustafa published. He co-authored a paper with Vitalik Buterin on this topic, Fraud and Data Availability Proofs, etc. It's a long-winded title. They use some fancy math to basically make it so these Light nodes can all agree and all have very strong security guarantees that the blocks are available without having to download the full block. And in fact, they only have to download a very, very tiny amount. Like, you're talking like less than 1% of the block. It's very small. And as the block sizes get bigger, then the percentage decreases even further. So it's like a very incredible scaling technology. And this is what essentially sets Celestia apart from these other blockchains. Is, let's say I'm running Ethereum today. How do I know, actually, that the Ethereum blockchain is valid, right? I would have to run an Ethereum full node. And if you try to run an Ethereum full node, it's quite expensive, right? It's quite hard to do. I ran an Ethereum full node in my basement, as the saying goes, because I was running an Ethereum validator at home, ETH2 validator, when ETH2 just launched. So I tried to do that as a, you know, fun experiment to see how it ran, and it was quite cumbersome.
What's the size of the storage
of an Ethereum full node? It's more than 1 terabyte now. I think it's approaching 2 terabytes. It's quite large, which is not great, right? One example is, you know, the blockchain size grows, but you can prune it. But to prune it, you have to turn off your node. And if you're running your node attached to a staking, like ETH1 node attached to an ETH2 node for staking, then suddenly your ETH2 node stops processing blocks and you lose out on staking rewards. And it's like, I don't know, do you want me to turn off my node to prune it? It was not fun at all to run an Ethereum node, especially if it's for staking. So Light nodes essentially allow you to get, essentially, with some, like, within some Epsilon guarantees, the same security guarantees as a full node, very strong, but with a cost of running, like, a very tiny fraction of the cost, right? And no other blockchain basically has implemented this, except Bitcoin to a certain extent, but they haven't implemented data availability sampling.
So I think there's one other blockchain. Like for each Light node, there's one full node?
No. So Light nodes will download samples from full nodes that exist in the network. So it's not like a one-to-one relationship.
Okay.
So there can be any large number of Light nodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, any full node. It's all completely permissionless, completely anonymous on the peer-to-peer network. So this is essentially the crux of why Celestia can scale so well, is that it allows verifiability. It means that it doesn't matter how expensive the Celestia validator nodes are to run, the Celestia validator set, even if it was just one person in a like in a server, and this one person said, okay, I'm gonna do it, like try to corrupt the chain and withhold some data, right? Make some invalid data. Even very cheap, a large number of very cheap light nodes would be able to detect this. And this sets Celestia apart from other blockchains. Ethereum, for instance, needs a very large number of validators because they don't have this property. They don't have light nodes with data availability sampling. So everyone needs to run a full node, therefore they need to keep the cost of a full node down, and this severely limits the scalability of their chain. Stuff like this. So that's essentially the intro to light nodes. I think your second question was around the Ginger upgrade and a recent block size increase. So the Ginger upgrade is actually passed a little, it was in December, so it was fairly recent. If you didn't go on Twitter over the holidays, you may have missed this, but it was in early December. It essentially, the Ginger upgrade did a few things. The most obvious and immediately relevant to scaling blockchains is it decreased the Celestia block time from 12 seconds down to 6 seconds, essentially, and it kept the block size the same. So this essentially doubled throughput while also making the UX of using Celestia better. Because now when you send a transaction, instead of having to wait on average 6 seconds, you have to wait on average 3 seconds. Right, so it's much nicer to use Celestia. But the Ginger upgrade also had certain technological improvements bundled into it that weren't immediately activated. We wanted to make sure that, you know, things were tested and stuff before the community decided to approve a vote that would bump the block size. So in addition to doubling the throughput, with the Ginger upgrade itself by having the block time, there was also an increase in the block size that was recently effectuated on the Mocha testnet. Mocha is the public long-running stable Celestia testnet. So it's basically the step before mainnet. If something happens on Mocha, the Mocha testnet is like the step before mainnet. That was recently bumped to 8 megabyte blocks, which is a quadrupling of throughput in addition to the earlier doubling of throughput. So there's like 8x the throughput compared to what Celestia was on December 1st, 2024, like a month ago. So this is going to happen. This is going to be on mainnet. Hopefully by the end of the month, we'll see if the community and validators approve of it. But it'll be, the anticipation is that it'll be on mainnet, this additional quadrupling, before the end of the month.
Amazing. Yeah, this is it's a big increase for just
It'll get Celestia to a throughput of around 1.33 megabytes per second. Which is that's quite substantial.
Yeah. What's the process actually of like reducing the block time from 12 to 6 seconds? Is it kind of arbitrary, or like why not reduce it to 8 or to 4 or to even 1? Like what are the considerations there?
Yeah, so that's actually a very good question. So the considerations are that light nodes, because light nodes are a thing in Celestia, light nodes need to download every block header. They don't have to download every block, but they have to download every block header and sample every single block. And because of that, suppose you could choose between doubling the block size or halving the block time, and you didn't care about UX, you just cared about throughput. It would be better to double the block size rather than halve the block time, because light nodes would have to sample the same number of blocks if you just increase the size of the block. Right? It's much better for light nodes if the blocks are larger and farther apart than if they're smaller and closer together, even if the throughput is the same. So the consideration around not reducing the block time too much is that it would increase the cost of light nodes. Now, that being said, and this is where it gets interesting, is there's actually a very straightforward, all things considered, solution to this issue, because we would like Celestia to have very fast block times, right? We would like it to have, 400 millisecond or faster block times, potentially. But that would impose a very large overhead on light nodes. So what do we do? Currently, Celestia blocks, and the sampling of each block is done in a way that's coupled. So each block must be sampled by the light node. But no one said you have to do that, right? When you can just do stuff. So one thing you can do is, instead of sampling each block, you sample batches of blocks at once. So we call that decoupling block construction from square construction. So squares are a block that is encoded in a special way using math, and the blocks are just the raw data of the blocks, including the transaction data. And these two processes don't have to be coupled like they are today. You can just decouple them, because you can just do stuff. This is kind of, let's call it optimization, as being discussed under the name fast blocks, slow squares, which is basically you can produce blocks very quickly, decouple block and square construction and make squares which contain a bunch of blocks together and encode them in a way with math for data availability sampling, you make squares larger and slower, and therefore you get the benefits of very fast blocks, very fast single slot finality, because Celestia uses Tendermint. You don't need to wait 12 minutes for finality. You get finality within a single block, which, you know, could be extremely quickly, you know, under a second. But then you don't incur the high cost on light nodes by decoupling square construction. So that's kind of the plan there.
So you said, like, you want to get it, or like in the optimal case, you want to get it even to like 400 milliseconds or something. There's also like a confirmation time, right? Which I think is around 10 minutes on Celestia.
No, there's no confirmation time.
All right. So
in Bitcoin, for instance, there's confirmation time, which is, well, in Bitcoin, the confirmation time is the time for a single block, I guess, and time to finality is 6 blocks. But on Celestia, you use Tendermint. So as soon as a Tendermint block is produced, it's immediately confirmed, and it's immediately final. So there's no distinction there. It's not like an Ethereum where in Ethereum you'll get one confirmation in 12 seconds, but then for something to be finalized, you have to wait 12 minutes or something. There's no distinction. Just one confirmation is also finality on Tendermint.
Amazing. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. So there's then, yeah, through Tendermint, instant finality. Block time actually matters a lot in that sense. What are your thoughts on like Celestia's data availability and then comparing it with Ethereum's plan for dank sharding as well? Do you have any thoughts on that? And it's like Celestia basically is already there where Ethereum wants to be sometime in the future. How do you see that?
Yeah, so my understanding is that dank sharding is aiming, it's not even close to that, but it's, you know, aiming for a throughput of, you know, 1.3 megabytes per second essentially. In some indeterminate number of years, who knows? You know, once they have data available to sampling and, you know, whatever number of blobs. But, you know, Celestia has that. Well, it doesn't have it today. It'll have it on mainnet. It has that today on Mocha. It'll have it, hopefully, on mainnet before the end of the month, you know, multiple years before Ethereum. So not only does Celestia have the throughput that Ethereum is aiming for years down the line, it also has the security of data availability sampling and of light nodes that, again, I think only one other blockchain has implemented data availability sampling, and there's a bunch of other shortcomings in their implementation, but, you know, it's extremely unique to have implemented data availability sampling and also have this high throughput, this combination thereof. This is basically like, you know, the end state of Ethereum roadmap is like Celestia basically has it today. And then from there, you know, Celestia is only going to get bigger blocks and lower throughput, lower latency, sorry, et cetera, et cetera. So there's also a funny story that I can regale you here with, that I'm sure the listeners will enjoy, which is that I was at the Modular Summit, I think it was the first one, and then a friend of mine, Matt, who works at the Ethereum Foundation, him and I were on a panel together and kind of riffing off each other, and then at a certain point they ask us, oh, what kind of throughput is Ethereum going to be able to do with dank sharding? They first asked me, oh, what kind of throughput is Celestia going to be able to support? And then I said 1.4 megabytes per second, which is, you know, what Celestia can basically support with the recent bump to 8 megabyte blocks. It's, you know, slightly over 1.3 megabytes per second. And then they go and they ask Matt, who's sitting next to me, and they say, oh, well, what kind of throughput is Ethereum aiming to support? And then he goes, 1.3 megabytes per second. I said 1.4 in part because Celestia can do it, as you can see, but also because it was higher than 1.3, which is, I knew what Ethereum was aiming for. So I was kind of trolling him, because I also knew, because he was going after me as they were going through the questions. So I was kind of trolling him, and it was pretty funny. But whenever you see, like, if you see a graphic online and it says Ethereum with dank sharding has 1.3 megabytes per second, and you see Celestia has 1.4 megabytes per second, That is the origin of those numbers. It was basically just me trolling Matt.
Yes,
Ethereum, I guess, is aiming for 1.3 post-dank sharding in 2026. Celestia is aiming for slightly more than 1.3, almost 1.4, with its recent upgrade, you know, at the beginning of 2025. But if you see those two specific numbers, like 1.4, know that it's someone who copied someone else who copied someone else who heard John trolling Matt. It's not based on any serious number. It's just a joke.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a little bit similar, like the TPS numbers that are always flowing around. Like, you see different numbers, like, on every graphic somehow.
And the thing about the TPS numbers is that, you know, once you get beyond a certain point, then those numbers don't mean anything. Especially now with the most, you know, recent round of marketing around these very high throughput chains. Like, know, some of them say 1 million TPS, the next guy says 10 million, the next guy says 100 million, and it's just like this giant dick measuring contest online. At a certain point, it's not about the capacity, it's about do you have users, right? So you have to get those users first to fill up the capacity. And what we've seen on Celestia is that Celestia is the, I think it has something like more than 75% of the data availability throughput across all data availability blockchains, including Ethereum blobs. And that number is only increasing over time. Like that, the trend is like this,
That's
I
like
don't say
the
not vertical line, but
utilization
it's
rate,
aligned with a
basically.
positive slope. So the not only is the usage of Celestia increasing in an absolute way, also it's the market share of its data availability throughput is also increasing, and I anticipate it to continue to increase the way things are going.
Yeah. So the 75%, that's basically the utilization rate of Celestia right now.
No, not the utilization rate. The market share of Celestia across all the DA layers.
All right.
In the
Okay.
sense that,
Okay.
you know,
Yeah.
people are posting stuff to blockchain, and then Celestia is like 75% of the of those DA layer of across DA layers.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. I would have to look up the numbers specifically.
What's the throughput of Ethereum right now, actually? So they want to achieve 1.3,
Yeah, I
but
think its throughput is currently on the order of 100 kilobytes per second, something like that. But don't quote me on that. I think it's on the order. I think it's on the order. It's not close to 1.3 megabytes per second though.
and then how do you compare, for example, with EigenDA, who's also, or like other data availability layers? How do you measure yourself against them, and how do you position Celestia as well?
It's like, well, that's the question is kind of like saying, how do you position yourself against AWS? It's like, I don't know, we can't compete against AWS on throughput. The thing is, they can say any number they want because the number is not backed by the need and the constraint of verifiability, right? If you run a thing, there's an S3 container, and then say we can do, you know, 100 megabytes per second. It's like, yeah, sure, you can. Like, I don't know, anyone can. Like, this is not hard, and it's also not secure. It's not decentralized, and all of the security of your system is now bottlenecked by that, right? Not just Amazon, but you know. One company basically. This is very different than Celestia, right? Celestia has billions of dollars in slashable stake stake that can be slashed that essentially backs the, let's say, the attestations of data availability for the chains that use it, for the non-sovereign, non-native chains that use Celestia for data availability. Of course, the chains that use natively Celestia for data availability, then they don't have to worry about, you know, Celestia trying to corrupt them because it cannot, because they're on Celestia. It's only, you know, things that involve bridging that there can be some corruption, but in that context, like I said, you know, it's billions of dollars of stake that are securing Celestia versus an AWS server for certain other protocols. So there's not really a comparison to be made there.
Yeah. And I guess apart from that, like to other decentralized availability layers, you would say like the market share is much more important than the throughput that anyone claims or something like that.
Yeah, because again, the most important thing is, are people using it? If you claim 100 megabytes per second, but people are using 1 megabyte per second, is it actually any better than something that can do
Yeah.
4 megabytes per second or something? Not necessarily, right?
And obviously Celestia has a great market fit with like rollups. A lot of rollups using it already. I'm actually curious in terms of like expanding the market share even further. What is your take on Bitcoin L2s? First of all, like I'm curious on your opinion on Bitcoin L2s. Do you think there will be like a thriving kind of computational ecosystem built on top of Bitcoin? And then will Celestia also be able to maybe act as like a data availability layer for Bitcoin or Bitcoin L2s, for example? Seems like a pretty good fit if that industry is going in the right direction.
Yeah, so the answer is yes. There's a number of Bitcoin L2s that I'm personally pretty excited about that are being developed. May or may not have angel invested in one or two of them, and you know they're which is not which is not an endorsement. Just because I backed something doesn't mean I endorse it, as Paradigm would say. But
Feel
you
free to
know,
drop names if you want.
I am optimistic that people will build rollups on top of Bitcoin, and I think there's an overton window shift, especially with the work that Eric and Udi are doing. To push, I think the BIP 420 or whatever it was. I think there's been a good shift in the Overton window of making the Bitcoin developer community more welcoming to experimentation. Let's put it that way. I think people understand the directionally what I'm trying to say. So, you know, whether or not these end up being adopted by the market, who knows? But I think that at the very least, we're going to see experimentation happen, which is great to finally see on Bitcoin. Whether or not Celestia can serve as a data availability layer for those, the answer is I don't see why not. There's some work that's being done to bridge Celestia data availability attestations from Celestia over to Bitcoin land to allow them to be used on various Bitcoin rollup and L2 adjacent constructions so that it'll be easy for them to use Celestia specifically for data availability. So sure, I guess we'll help. I'm hoping to see Celestia being used on Bitcoin for Bitcoin L2s on
is there any particular challenge compared to like Ethereum L2s, or is it pretty much the same?
There's different challenges in the sense that the Bitcoin verification layer is substantially more restrictive than what is available on Ethereum. That introduces the challenge. But if we're being honest, the Ethereum execution layer is also, you know, things like extremely congested and stuff. So what's really the difference between something that can't do something because it functionally can't and something that can't do something because it costs too much to do that thing? Potentially not that much. So because of that, you know, the challenges aren't insurmountable. They're just technical challenges that smart people are currently in the process of solving.
Yeah. And just curious, like for our listeners, like your personal opinion, do you think Bitcoin L2s or like the ecosystem on Bitcoin can really compete with like Ethereum or like Solana or other chains? Do you see like a plausible possibility for this whole ecosystem to really gain a lot of traction, or is it more kind of a wild dream?
I don't know if I would commit to. I don't know if I have strong opinions in either direction. I would say it's still early, and it's honestly anyone's game at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for what you guys are building. I think there's a lot to come, and I'm also very curious what you will come up like in 2025. I guess like you mentioned 1 gigabyte blocks, like throughput is not a goal really, or like, I mean, it can kind of be the target, I guess. But may still be a long way, but you seem to be like really pushing hard to go in that direction.
Long way relative to an extremely aggressive timeline, not long way compared to, let's say, Ethereum's timeline of shipping. Like we're talking maybe a long way is like a year away versus 10 years.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
a year in crypto
it's a relative way of phrasing it. But yeah, I think we'll see, and you know, the Celestia Labs engineering team and other core developers of Celestia have been doing really amazing work, along with non-Celestia affiliated people in the broader Cosmos and blockchain community, have been contributing a lot to this. How to build bigger blocks, also within the context of data availability sampling and in the context of Tendermint. So, like, just in the past, like, you know, 2 months, we've managed to increase the bandwidth 2x, then another 4x, so 8x. It's almost an order of magnitude. You know, obviously, a lot of engineering work went into being able to do this, but also during that, a lot of experimentation and stuff was done to figure out what to do. A lot of bottlenecks were cleared. So I anticipate that future increases, you know, another 4x and another 4x after that, is very possible to have. Like 2 4x's is not out of the question to happen even this year, which is, you know, way beyond what you can see in certain other less aggressive blockchain ecosystems. But with respect to what's coming in 2025. I did want to talk about something that we're super excited about, which is ZK accounts. If I can segue into ZK accounts, completely different than data availability sampling. So what's a ZK account? In a normal blockchain, let's say Ethereum land, right, you have accounts. I'll just use Ethereum, like there's Bitcoin UTXOs and stuff, but John is done talking about UTXOs. We'll talk about accounts. In Ethereum accounts, you know, accounts have, without going into too much detail, let's say they have an account balance and they have a public key associated with them. And then to authorize a transaction, you would provide in the transaction itself, or sorry, to authorize spending from an account, you would provide in a transaction, or you could design a more general system that has messages instead of top-level transactions. But let's say in a transaction, you have a signature, right? That when you verify the signature, you see it's from the private key that correspond that, you know, is paired up with the public key, and then, you know, the blockchain state machine sees that and says, okay, this transaction is authorized to spend XYZ from whatever signed over from this account, and spends it and does some action. With account abstraction, you can, instead of just doing that, with account abstraction, you could list some code, right? And the code is executed, and assuming the code returns true, if the code returns true at the end, then the account is authorized to be, if the execution of the code over some inputs and state returns false, then the account is not authorized to spend and the transaction is invalid in some way. Of course, account abstraction is hard because the difference between a transaction being invalid and a transaction reverting is the difference between something being DOSable and something not being DOSable. So it's like a whole, account abstraction is a whole can of worms. But there's something you can do that's in the same, it's getting close to account, it's getting at least directionally similar to account abstraction, but that is even more expressive, which is, imagine you have an account, and the account has attached, associated with it, a ZK verification key. Now, verification keys uniquely encode, or within some cryptographic guarantee bound, statistical bounds, they encode a program. Well, really a circuit, but they encode a program as opposed to just a public key, right? They encode a program. Similar to account abstraction, how account abstraction has a program. So now imagine you have an account, and to spend from this account, right, you have to provide a ZK proof over some inputs and state, and the ZK proof has to be from a circuit that matches that verification key that's associated with a ZK account. And if the ZK proof verifies correctly, then the account can be spent from. And that's essentially the crux of a ZK account. It's like a much more expressive account abstraction that can also be associated with state and not just an account balance. So it's not just spending, but it's also advancing some sort of state associated with the ZK account. Now, what can you do with this, right? What can you do with this primitive? You can actually build a native trustless two-way bridge with a ZK rollup on Celestia without any virtual machine on the base layer. The way it works is the verification key could be, it verifies the a ZK-fied state machine of the rollup. Like you could be, let's say it could be an EVM rollup, right? And essentially, the state in the ZK account keeps track of the state in the ZK rollup. Right, and every time you want to advance the ZK rollup, you post a new ZK proof to the ZK account and it advances the state root. The verification key stays the same. And through various state machine logic, you can also enable bridging off TIA and other assets to and from this ZK account. So like you can deposit it into the ZK account and then the rollup considers that as a deposit into the ZK rollup state. You can do stuff and then you can withdraw from the ZK rollup state down into the ZK account, and because it's all ZK, you can verify it's all correct, and then spend out of the ZK account. So essentially, the spend, sending money to the ZK account is depositing, and spending out of the ZK account is withdrawing. So using the same primitives that you would use for just a regular account and similar to account abstraction, you can actually get a trustless two-way bridge with no execution on the base layer, essentially getting you settlement without execution. Settlement without settlement. Which is incredibly powerful because one of the huge there's a hu some bottlenecks with Ethereum's EVM, the settlement layer, right? It's not scalable. It's very expensive to run a node. It's high state bloat. It is not expressive. It's very expensive to do certain operations. The set of operations you can do is limited by what the EVM supports, and the EVM is highly ossified. If you want to do something that's not supported, like if you want to do cryptography that's not supported in precompile, too bad, so sad, that's not happening. If you put all of that stuff into a ZK, like verifying a ZK circuit, it doesn't matter how expensive it is because the Celestia base layer state machine is just verifying a ZK proof, which is constant cost. It doesn't matter if you do fancy cryptography. It doesn't matter if you want to use Schnorr signatures or EDDSA or ECDSA or anything in the middle, or use your phone as like security key. Some people use phones nowadays to sign transactions. You can do all of that, and you can have a trustless two-way bridge between these rollups and Celestia, or other protocols, or other chains even. They don't have to be rollups on Celestia. They can even be another chain, like Solana or Ethereum. You can wrap them in a ZK account. You can have trustless two-way bridges with them, all without Celestia needing to support native execution, all while keeping Celestia highly scalable. So there's an incredibly powerful primitive that's going to be added to Celestia. The anticipation is this year,
Wow. So
or
that means like
not even like too late this year, like possibly H1 this year.
for a rollup that uses Celestia as data availability, you could basically send funds to another wallet on another rollup that also uses data availability from Celestia without the
Yeah, so you
need
get you,
to
yeah.
settle on a consensus chain. Or like Celestia is basically acts as a settlement and consensus layer then as well,
Yes.
right?
That is correct, yes. And it can do this without needing an execution system to verify, say, fraud proofs or like to verify certain specific ZK proofs or to keep track of complex state in dispute games or whatever in bridge contracts. It doesn't need any of that. Literally, the only thing Celestia keeps track of for each of these ZK rollups and their bridges is just one verification key and then one state root, and that's it. Some fixed number of bytes and then another 32 bytes, and you're good to go for each account, as opposed to having this very complex, smart contract and all this other stuff. It's all pushed into ZK land. Yeah, so then you get settlement without execution, and then you can move TIA and all their assets to and from the rollups completely, and even potentially between the rollups completely trustlessly and very quickly, right? No long dispute periods like with optimistic rollups and stuff.
So that basically makes proof of stake redundant, or like even restaking redundant, right? You just need like Celestia, and like you don't need like any consensus chain anymore, theoretically, like if you spin it a bit further.
You're not wrong. I mean, that to a certain extent, that's the one of the goals of Celestia, right? And is that you're making deploying blockchains and rollups as easy as it is to deploy a smart contract. So with a smart contract, you don't need to run an entire consensus network, right? With a smart contract, you just plug it, you just run it on a blockchain. So it makes sense that a rollup should also not need its own consensus network. You just plug it on top of Celestia, and it just works TM. And that's where we're going.
Wow, yeah. I mean, I'm very excited for it. This sounds amazing.
It's a huge nerd's nape. Once people get into it, they're like, oh, hell yeah, this is exactly how blockchain should have been designed. And the funny thing is, I remember there was, this was like a decade ago, or almost at this point, Gregory Maxwell from Bitcoin Core was, talking to the Ethereum people saying, oh, the Ethereum people don't know how to design blockchains because they execute transactions. Really, you should be verifying things, right? You should be verifying transactions. And to a certain extent, that's correct, because that's the distinction between Bitcoin and Ethereum. Bitcoin verifies predicates. It doesn't execute them, right? Ethereum will execute transactions. And it turns out that Greg Maxwell was correct, but for the wrong reasons, which is the blockchain should not execute transactions. It should not execute complex state transitions. Like, it doesn't mean it shouldn't execute transactions. Obviously, you need a state transition. The execution needs to be, advanced, like send coins around, right? Or approve spending. That's execution. But you can't avoid that, right? But no, the general purpose computation, Greg Maxwell, it turns out to be correct, is that you don't actually need this for a blockchain to be expressive and to have functional escape velocity, as Vitalik would like to say. You only actually need verification because of the magic of zk-SNARKs and because of this account abstraction direction-like thing of ZK accounts, is you just verify the execution that's proven, the execution is proven in a ZK proof, and you just verify it on the base chain. You don't need to execute anything, and you get all the same functionality that you get out of execution chains like Ethereum, like Solana, like everything basically except Bitcoin.
Couldn't it also like act as a solution for Bitcoin to make proof of work redundant?
Bitcoin, maybe, but the thing about Bitcoin is it doesn't need a solution. Bitcoin is Bitcoin. But you don't have to fix Bitcoin. People have tried, and I also went through a long phase of saying Bitcoin should be better as Bitcoin Cash supporter and stuff. But the fact of the matter is Bitcoin. You don't have to fix it.
It may be right. I was just thinking, like, if you just, like, because the value in Bitcoin is having 21 million, and as long as you keep the 21 million, the proof of work may not matter if you can replace it with something else.
Potentially, yeah.
I guess this is very far out. In any case, like, sounds really amazing. I'm excited for ZK accounts and also, like, first applications around it. It really sounds like Celestia could become like a very integral part of further making the blockchain ecosystem much, much more efficient. I'd be a little bit worried, maybe, like, obviously, like, the number one use case of blockchain is like creating new blockchains and layer ones, and consensus always plays a big role. That would be maybe my worry. If we make all of that redundant, what's kind of working?
Well, it's working as unstoppable applications. And that's what really matters, right? Like, Celestia enables that, right? With this very low throughput, with this the low overhead that is, I don't want to say guaranteed, but let's say the aim of low overhead as opposed to value extraction from the base layer means that protocols can build on top of it with much higher confidence that they're not going to get rugged by high fees and by a community of people in the L1 that just want to extract them for all the rent that they're worth. But that instead, more synergistic relationship of, very high throughput, and you can, for instance, get good revenue by having smaller fees with more throughput. And then more people there's higher social welfare, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I guess what it allows is really like to any application in the world to decentralize very easily without the need for like any chain themselves for anything, just using Celestia as a plug and play solution to decentralize any service on the internet.
Yes.
Amazing. Cool. Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. Very, very great insights. I'm very excited for 2025. And
I am as well. There's actually one last topic I wanted to bring up.
All right. Go ahead.
The idea behind Mammoth NFTs. Mammoth NFTs have kind of been an exciting thing that was launched. I'm not sure who launched them, but someone launched them in late last year. The kind of how it started is that the last year, Celestia Labs had like an internal testnet that we call the Mammoth Mini Testnet, which is essentially saying, okay, what happens if we prototyped a lot of the optimizations that we've been talking about, that we said we could do, right? Let's prototype them. Let's maybe cut some corners on, let's remove the spinning rims and cut some corners on security, just to say, okay, if we could implement these optimizations, you know, one year or whatever down the line, what would the bandwidth actually look like to see in practice, right? So as an experiment to see what would these optimizations deliver in terms of throughput. And then we managed to get a testnet. This was like not even like that. It took us like a week of work to do this. We managed to get a testnet that could run at 27 megabytes per second, which based on the most recent increase, which is going to be 1.33 megabytes per second, we're talking like 20 times that in terms of throughput. And in fact, that is like fairly close to one gigabyte blocks, 1 gigabyte every 12 seconds. That's actually like approaching that, which is kind of scary. And this is just based on an initial round of optimizations that are fairly low hanging fruit and fairly easy to implement, and that are going to be implemented over the next year. So we could be looking at, you know, similar throughput numbers to that very soon. And kind of, I guess, to commemorate this idea of, you know, we're not in the low throughput world and blockchain world anymore, really hitting, you know, not just the broadband, but the fiber era. We're going to have large mammoth sized blocks. You know, someone in the community launched these mammoth NFTs to kind of commemorate that. So yeah, that's the TLDR on mammoth. If you see mammoths on the timeline and you say, okay, I need mammo, or like something like that, then you know what that's all about.
And the NFTs got airdrop to everyone on the testnet, I guess, right?
Or... I'm not sure what the minting criteria. I wasn't too heavily involved in the actual design of the minting criteria. But there was some sort of minting criteria for the mammoth NFTs. Yeah.
Amazing. Do you have one yourself?
I do have one. Yes. I'm not going to dock myself, but I do have one. Yes. I am a mammoth holder.
Amazing.
I have a memo.
I want one now too. I think I saw them on the timeline already.
Yeah, people are putting them up as their PFPs. I should probably do that too, honestly. But then I'll dock myself. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, why not? But yeah, sounds very great. I like the analogy of like mammoth for like mammoth blocks. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, thanks. Thank you for having me. And it was great being on.
Cool. Thanks, John. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to everything ahead. Thanks for being on.
Bye.
Cheers.